Advised.
All righty, everybody. Good evening and welcome. It's 11 o'clock. It's Wednesday, June 24th, 2020. And thanks for joining us for part two of the 88th episode of the Rock and Roll Shrink Radio Show here on Blog Talk Radio. Special thanks to our host, NDB Media. I'm Casey Shapiro, and with me tonight is Dr. Stephen Mathis, aka the Rock and Roll Shrink. We'll be taking calls from our listeners all evening during the show for the next hour at 914-338-0314. You can also follow along in our live chat room on blogtalkradio.com as the show is happening. Before we begin, a couple quick disclaimers. This show does not constitute a doctor-client relationship, nor legal or medical representation of any kind. Also, the views expressed on this show are those of Dr. Mathis and Ms. Shapiro, and are not an official stance on behalf of the psychological community or its peer vetting or regulatory bodies. And now, a topic-relevant bit of music played by Dr. Mathis himself. Take it away, Doc. As always, thank you for that, and if you would please let us know the name of the song and the artist and its relevance to tonight's topic.
So that was Rising Power by AC/DC, since we're still on the Power Dilly. I thought that'd be kind of a nice companion piece to our last piece I played last week, since we're continuing the theme of power and what to do with it, and how to resist it when it becomes a behemoth.
Yes, perfect. As Dr. Mathis mentions, tonight's topic is entitled King Nothing, Power Corrupts, Part 2, which we'll discuss in a moment. And before we begin that topic discussion, let's first go to the Rock and Roll Shrink Recalls, a moment of rock music trivia stories as recounted by Dr. Mathis, if you would, sir.
Okay, so since we're doing part two, and I last in the last installment, I profiled a bass player, Donald Duck Dunn, excuse me, who most of you know but didn't know you know. So I had mentioned this gentleman upon our last show, and I thought I would go ahead and feature him, who's also a bass player. And this is Leland Sklar. And he is probably the most recorded bass player in history. I'll name some of the artists when I give you the rundown, but this is a gentleman who has probably performed on more records with more artists than you can shake a stick at. And I mean, his range is very varied. So it's not like, oh, he just performed on rock people or acoustic people or classical people or big band people or, you know, what do you call those guys, torch singer people or whatever. Excuse me. So he started out, and he still is predominantly a session musician. I mean, he plays on stage with a lot of folks, but he really has gotten his claim to fame as a stage session musician who, you know, I know, for those of you who don't know, if you are a regular session musician, particularly if you're in one of the big cities like L.A. or Nashville or even Atlanta, but anywhere, if you're doing regular studio gigs, you've got to be on your game. And this guy is definitely on his game. He has appeared as the de facto house band, which is called The Section, for Electro Asylum Records, and has played both instrumental stuff and with vocal people, ranging anywhere from Carole King to Phil Collins to James Taylor to Toto to Jackson Browne to Warren Zevon. So he's even appeared on TV. He was with the band, excuse me, where there was a movie that was done, and he is at the band. So the Rhinestone film, he's the bass player of the Rhinestone House Band that's on that movie. This guy's just been everywhere. He started out at Cal State, actually, and was picked up at James Taylor early on in his career to play some venues with him. And they thought, well, you know, we'll do some gigs, it'll be fun, yada, yada. Well, of course, James Taylor got picked up for a record deal, and then he ended up asking Sklar to come along with him. And with Sklar came Russ Kunkel, who is another very famous session guy, drummer, Danny Korchmer, guitarist, and keyboardist Craig Dirge. And these are all made up the band called the quote-unquote The Section. And particularly Korchmer, Kunkel, along with Sklar, were James Taylor's band. And when he and Carole King did their duos back in the day in the Troubadour, and actually when they did their reunion tour about 6-7 years ago, these were the three guys that played with them, Korchmer, Kunkel, and Sklar. So I had the original guys playing with him, and they still sound amazing. Sklar is still alive and rocking. I think he's 73 now, maybe 74. He was the guy I mentioned that had the beard and was way ZZ Top before ZZ Top was ZZ Top. He had the beard thing going on. He's still got the beard thing going on. So he really got very, very famous playing with those folks. And then through his gig with James Taylor came all the other people that he played with over the years. Originally, his favorite instrument was basically a put together jazz and precision bass that he originally had back in the day, and he took it and carved it up, and it became his love bass. He's got a peace symbol on it, and he took that on tour with him when he played recently, which is he's done that with both the Fender jazz bass and the Fender precision bass. Back in the early 2000s, he started playing a bass that was made by him by Dingwall Guitars, which I think was a 5-string, and it ended up being one of his signature bass. And the thing that's unusual about that particular bass is it's got fan frets, which really look funny. If you look at a fretboard with a bass or a guitar that has fan frets, the frets kind of do like a fan thing as they're going down the neck, and it's really disconcerting to see. And I have an acoustic that's a fan fret, Loudon, and you can't, just as a player, I can't look at my hands with the fanfare. It messes me up, but if I just don't look at the fretboard, I'm fine. And the reason that is because it gives the right scaling for the bass strings and the treble strings to maximize their vibration, so it really does cool stuff. Back in 2010, he started playing Warwick basses, and I think his originally his bass was a Star bass, and that became his main bass in the studio. And then he, after playing with Warwick basses for a while, he ended up becoming an endorser for them. And then in the Winter NAMM in 2016, Warwick announced that they had a special Little Sklar bass that was sort of a his version of a Star bass that he had morphed and done a semi-acoustic kind of thing with it, and had a more offset body and a forearm contour. But I mean, throughout the his years, he's played the Fenders, he's played the Dingwalls. He had a special signature instrument from Gibson at one time, and I think from Valley Arts guitars as well. So he's definitely been around, but his main bass is the Warwick. His main signature is the Warwick. So I just wanted to name some of the acts that he has played on their records and be sitting down, because this is a really long list. So, and I put these in alphabetical order, so they're not in order of preference. In fact, some of these folks, and no offense to these artists, some of these folks you wouldn't catch me dead listening to. I'm sorry, they're just not my cup of tea. And some of these artists I would, you know, I'm not worthy. But he has certainly done it all, and your hat's got to be off to a guy who can play that amazing kinds of bass and morph his style to that the artist. That really takes talent. So he's played off Air Supply Records, he's played off America Records, Bee Gees, Hoyt Axton, Carol Bayer Sager. That name always drove me crazy. Yeah, it's just too sing-songy for me. Nothing against her. She's a really great songwriter. Stephen Bishop, Clint Black, for God's sake. Carla Bonoff. Wow. Jackson Browne, he's done all the world famous Jackson Browne albums. As one of my friends likes to call him, Jimmy Buffet. He's played on Glenn Campbell's records, Eric Carmen record, the guy that was originally with the Raspberries, Kim Carnes, yeah. David Cassidy, for God's sake, Ray Charles, Billy Cobham, Joe Cocker, Leonard Cohen. He's played bass on a shoot ton of Phil Collins records and toured with Phil on solo tour. Rita Coolidge, Crosby, Stills, and Nash, Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young, just David Crosby, Crosby and Nash, Gene Clark, who used to be with the Byrds, with David Crosby, Neil Diamond, Dion Donovan, Thomas Dolby, for God's sake, The Doors.
Wow.
The first record they did after Jim Morrison passed was Full Circle. He's the bass player on that recording. England Dan and John Ford Coley, Richie Ferrey, who was with Poco, Art Garfunkel, Vince Gill, whose original band, most people may or not know this, was the Pure Perry League, Amy, What You Gonna Do? That's Vince Gill's first band. Andrew Gold, Amy Grant, Arlo Guthrie, Sammy Hagar, Merle Haggard, there's the other end of the spectrum, Hall and Oates, he's a bass player on Don Henley's I Can't Stand Still record that has Dirty Laundry, one of my favorite tunes of all times. Freddie Jackson, Michael Jackson, Carole King, Danny Kortchmer's solo records, Kris Kristofferson's records, Chris with Greeter Coolidge, Wynonna Judd, Lyle Lovett, Steve Lukather, who's the guitar player for Toco, one of the original guys, Manhattan Transfer, there's two ends of the spectrum for you, Reber McEntire, Roger McGuinn, a former Byrds guy, Bette Midler, Graham Nash, which makes perfect sense given his heritage, so to speak, Randy Newman, the Olivia Newton-John, for God's sake, the Oak Ridge Boys, Mike Oldfield, Dolly Parton,
wow.
He's based. Yeah, Sean Phillips, Poco, which makes perfect sense, Bonnie Raitt, which makes pretty good sense, Cliff Richard, Johnny Rivers, for God's sake, Linda Ronstadt, which makes perfect sense, Diana Ross, David Sanborn, another jazz guy, Neil Sedaka, Carly Simon, Ricky Skaggs, Spencer Davis Group on one of their records, Rick Springfield off one of his records, Rod Stewart, Stephen Stills, George Strait, Barbara Streisand, Donna Summer, James Taylor, which he started out with, Billy Thorpe, he's the bass player on the famous song Children of the Sun, that's Billy Thorpe, his record, that's Leland Sklar. He played off two Toto records, Jimmy Webb, the guy that authored MacArthur Park, Wilson Phillips, Paul Williams, and all of Lauren Zevon's famous records. So as you can see, he's got quite a pedigree, which is why I said this is probably the most recorded bass player you don't know, but you know you know, but you don't know you know, right? And there you go.
Yeah.
And wow. Still going strong today, which I think is awesome.
Yeah, that is quite a varied pedigree. I have to give him that.
Oh, yeah.
That definitely,
I mean, it's
hacked
like,
off
what
to
the
him.
Hell? Yeah, I mean, you've really got to be on your game to play that stuff. And I've heard him do riffs on all those things, and I'm just like, how do you go from that to that? Well, I guess if you're talented, very easily. But if you're not, not so easily.
Yeah, that's fair.
So that's my shout-out to Leland Sklar, who also, by the way, has been doing really remarkable YouTube kind of shelter-in-place little video dillies. He's been doing them on a really, really regular basis. And if you ever see any, I really encourage our listeners to go look at those. They are really well done. And he's just – the thing that will strike you about Mr. Sklar is that he is so completely unimpressed with himself. He's like one of the most humble, nice, genuinely – good guys out there, which is I really can't say about too many music people. And well, I've certainly never met the gentleman. I'd love to, but having never met the gentleman, I've heard stories of other musicians who have met him, and certainly if you look at the YouTube videos, they are ridiculously warm and inviting, and he's very supportive of the health workers during this COVID thing. I mean, he's just an amazing guy. So get to know him. He's uber cool, and he's really talented. That's a very hard combination to beat.
Yeah, well, fabulous. All right. Thank you, and thanks to him for all that. All right. So, yeah, you're right. I didn't know him. But, you know, prolific and talented. So, fabulous. Thanks for that. And again, we will take calls from our listeners and questions in the online chat room throughout the rest of the evening until around midnight. So feel free to give us a call. Again, the number is 914-338-0314. All righty. And I'm going to slip in a clip that I didn't have last week. Dr. Mathis was kind enough to play. But I just wanted to play this for you guys real quick. Let me cue this up. I'm sorry about that. I have a long list of sound files I got to go through here. All right, here we go. And it all crashes down, and you break your crown, and you put your face up, but there's no one around. Just one thing, just to play the king. But the castle's crumbled, and you're left for just a day. Where's your crown, king? Alrighty, so yes, that is on theme for tonight. The title of our show last week, not last week, 2 weeks ago, pardon, and tonight is from the Metallica song King Nothing. Other notable songs from which we might be drawing are Cult of Personality by Living Color or Take the Power Back by Rage Against the Machine. Dr. Mathis brought us another one tonight, and there are so many songs about toxic leaders, fascists, abusers of authority and power, and related concepts. This dynamic seems to be socially iconic and rooted in primal power-seeking instincts, bolstered by the psychological manipulation techniques now available to modern people through the science of psychology as well as rhetoric and propaganda. Power corrupts. This is a quintessential trope, slogan, adage, what have you, t-shirt wisdom. It is that ingrained in our society, and for good reason. It is a standard which we say we want to move past and evolve beyond, but never seem to collectively make significant progress towards doing so. Abuse of power goes hand in hand with the sycophants who make it possible. Those so caught up in propaganda, rhetoric, confirmation bias, and groupthink that they cannot respond thoughtfully, empirically, or with any ability to consider multiple sides of issues. They become too personally invested in maintaining the illusion into which they already sank their time, energy, ego, and personal reputation. It becomes a self-actualization and self-esteem crisis, eventually. So tonight we want to continue to analyze why this is. It sounds simple, yet so many people struggle with this concept, especially when it comes to not being sucked up into it and letting it run them. Perhaps it is more that this is simple but not very easy to deal with. So last time, on the first part of the show, we discussed what is abusive power exactly and what is its appeal, and then the history of these sorts of things, examples, studies, and propaganda. And in the second half tonight, we want to talk about causes for these things. Pardon me a moment. Sorry, I had a little throat tickle. Pathologies, groupthink, etc., and suggestions for coping with abuse of power, both personally and as a society. And before we get started, I'm going to check in with you, Dr. Mathis, and see if there's anything you want to say before we get started.
I'm good.
All righty. And I have another music clip for you guys, something I mentioned earlier that I have ready for you now from British band Living Colour. All right, so we are going to start off skipping sections 1 and 2 because we did that last time. And section 3, causes, pathologies, groupthink, etc. One of the biggest factors that contributes to the sycophantic behavior that keeps making abuse of power repeatedly possible is called groupthink. Groupthink is a term first used in 1972 by social psychologist Irving L. Janis that refers to a psychological phenomenon in which people strive for consensus within a group. In many cases, people will set aside their own personal beliefs or adopt the opinion of the rest of the group. Groupthink occurs when people's desire to maintain group loyalty becomes more important than making the best choices. According to Janis, groupthink is, quote, a deterioration of mental efficiency, reality testing, and moral judgment that results from in-group pressures, end quote. The desperate need to belong and have the approval of the group keeps most people from doing or even saying anything contrary, even if they may suspect deep down in their conscience that they may be doing wrong. Their hunger for the acceptance is greater than the value they place in ethics and morals. This is not necessarily indicative of a specific pathology or even a mental illness per se. It's a behavior that is present at various levels in many people. Abuse of power at any sort of extreme level seems to follow the same sort of patterns as bullying behavior. It's more likely to come from environment, upbringing, and or peer reinforcement. And at this point, I want to gesture at the concept of causes for this. There's a lot of debate in the mental health community about whether this is environmental or genetics, insofar as people who abuse power in positions in society, for example, do the environments cause or encourage certain acts of violence and or abuse of power, or do certain people gravitate towards those scenarios to justify their pathological personalities, or is it both? Or is it a little column A, little column B? And for this, I want to turn to Dr. Mathis and get his opinion on this, if you would, sir.
Excuse me.
You okay? Yep.
Yeah, I swallowed something down the wrong way. So I'm, the lemonade I'm sipping kind of went, whoops.
Got it.
yeah, it's a little of both, actually. So what you typically see is that folks who have a propensity to abuse power will gravitate in places that they can do that, that they can grab power and that they can then hold on to it, excuse me, and then use other people essentially as puppets in their attempt to expand what they believe to be is their power. But as I tell most people, the real power comes in controlling yourself and having power over yourself. That's real power, because anybody with a strong personality or with a big enough stick or a big enough gun or enough money can get anybody to do what they want them to do. It's really the person who can put a lid on their own pathological id, so to speak, and control their own impulses. And that seems to be in short supply these days, particularly given the set of events that have happened over the last several months here, at least in this country. And so what I think what you see is you see one of two kinds of folks typically go to power positions. Folks who have beneficent intentions but are somewhat naive and go in there, and then they get discouraged, and then they get either bitter or discouraged, and then they either leave or kind of give in and become part of the cog in the wheel. Or you see people who go there with the intent to abuse and to take advantage of and to maximize their own personal ego gains or money or whatever at the expense of other folks. And, you know, a lot of those folks have significant cluster B traits if they're not a full-blown cluster B person. And some folks just really get a charge out of going in, and they become catalysts. So they go into a place, they jack everybody up, they identify the one or two people in the group that are leaders, that have the most charisma, that have the most personal power, whatever. They'll get them going and then start the process and then leave. So they're like the chemical that starts the process but doesn't really participate in the process. And you see a lot of that happening. And these are the guys and gals that's down the sideline going, well, I didn't really do anything. Oh, yeah, right. So you have those, you know, and occasionally you'll have somebody who wants the power to be very beneficent, to really impact a lot of people in a positive ways. And you'll see people going in there who get power and then use it for the public good, if you will, not just for their own personal gains. Those folks are very few and far between. And they seem to have some innate ability to put a lid on their stuff and at the same time have very pro-social aims at their intentions. Most folks who want to garner a lot of power in the cluster B category don't have such lofty goals at all. And they sort of gravitate to places where they can, and scenarios where they can do that, whether it's in, you know, excuse me, whether it's in maximum security prisons or whether it's in high-ranking politics where they can get away with stuff, or, you know, even as we've seen lately, some folks in, you know, in police academies and in positions of power, you know, in SWAT teams and whatever. I have to say that given all the backlash with a lot of stuff we've been seeing, I mean, most of the folks that I have met who belong to these organizations, particularly in leadership positions, have been pretty responsible people. But you're going to get, when you open it up, you're going, you know, to the general population, you have a bigger population sample, a bigger N, as it's called in research statistics. And when you have a bigger N, you have a much more likelihood of getting more diversity in the population. So you're going to get people from all walks of personality life, so to speak. But the folks who are really going to be attracted to the power positions in general, you know, are not going to be, they're not going to have the greatest of intentions for the most part. Or if they do, they're going to get the position and they're going to be overwhelmed, or they're going to, you know, have too much to do, and they're going to start not being mindful of the people they hire under them, and then things kind of go awry, which is what you've seen in the last couple of months here in this country. But you see it everywhere. You see it in politics. You see it in war, in armies, in generals, in leaders of countries. I mean, you see it everywhere. You know, you see it with baseball teams or football teams. I mean, anywhere you've got a group of people, you've got a team together, where you've got a group or a team together, whether it's a street gang or, you know, the mafia or the FBI or the CIA, you know, or whatever, you're going to have the bad seeds. And, you know, if they have a very dominant personality, some of these folks can be very charming. And so if you see the most successful sociopaths, these are folks, and this is true of most cluster B personality disorders, the real successful ones have great curb appeal. They really know how to sell themselves. They know how to maximize. They have great cult of personality, you know, to quote Living Color's title. They have great cult of personalities. Now, you see people who are, you know, good examples of that, who use their power over the people, if you will, in a very beneficent way. I mean, if you go see some of the rock bands, for example, in history, you have people who have incited crowds and done very malicious messages to crowds to riot and do all kinds of crazy things. And then you see people who really use their musical and personal power to empower other people and for folks to have a good time and to bring people together. Freddie Mercury was a great example of that, right? But then, you know, you have other people who get on stage and want to incite folks. And I don't want to name any names because I don't want to besmirch anybody. But, you know, we have plenty of examples of that. And unfortunately, we have a lot more examples of that than we do the Freddie Mercury's, at least in the music business, in the rock industry at least. But, you know, you'll see that with rap, the same thing with the rappers. You'll see some rappers who are very much, hey, let's get together, let's you know, live together, let's be peaceful, let's, you know, all be the same. And you get these rappers who are, yeah, let's go, you know, let's put a cap in everybody's butt and, you know, all this garbage. And you, when you, that message that appeals to people who feel powerless, for people who don't have a lot of esteem, that's a huge ploy. And that's a huge attraction for them because they can get power vicariously by living through the group leader. It's the same thing when you have, you know, riots and mass things. I mean, it was true in Napoleon's day. And Napoleon understood this really, really well. So, you know, he'd get in front of the crowd and, you know, you have these crowd guys in the front and gals in the front who were inciting the crowd. Yeah, burn, you know, burn the Bastille, or, you know, they come up. And he would simply go up to them with a cannon and say, disperse or I'm going to shoot this cannon off. And they would, and he'd go bang. And he'd kill the first 30 or 40 people in the crowd and he would get rid of the inciters. And guess what happened to the crowd? That's right, they left. Because none of these people would have done half the stuff they would have done had they not been under the spell, so to speak, of the two or three malignant folks who were trying to incite them. Really, I don't know if I should say this on the air, but I'm going to say it anyway. As one of my friends would say, the bigger dick theory. I'm going to shake it. That's right. I got it. I'm going to shake it. Right? So it's these folks, you know, who want to prove to everybody how macho and how powerful and how big man on campus they are, or big woman on campus they are. And all they're really doing is causing a lot of trouble for people and getting the other folks who are either not too aware or too weak-willed or whatever, they've been swept along with the mood and they want to belong and they feel powerless and this is a way for them to get power back. Now, this is especially true when you get in society or in a situation where there's a lot of stress and you have a lot of pent-up anger and frustration and helplessness. And I think that's what's happened with our recent situation with all these riots and stuff you're seeing. You know, my guess is if people hadn't have been sequestered for the last 2 to 3 months in this country with this COVID thing and been scared witless with this COVID thing, you would have never seen what you've seen recently happen with all these riots and protests and stuff. And I'm not suggesting that some of the things that were done were kosher to be done, because I'm not. But I'm just saying people would not have been as reactionary, excuse me, to those events had they not been already stressed out and wondered where their next meal is coming from in some cases, because the people have lost their jobs and they can't get out and they're getting cabin fever. You know, any time you put people in a box, so to speak, and you put the pressure on and you limit the funds, you know, and you see people who are talking out of both sides of their mouth and power, you're going to have malcontents in the general population who are going to come up, in some cases rightfully so, and say, you know, we're not going to take this crap anymore. What the hell? And then you get one or, you know, a couple of these sociopathic types that come in, and then they just want to incite everybody to, you know, destroy and burn and all this kind of good stuff. And if you look at the people throughout history who were successful at causing social change, they weren't the people who were doing it with violence. They were the people who were doing it with nonviolence. So half of the stuff that, you know, that you're seeing, you wouldn't be seeing if it weren't for these, if it weren't for a combination of these powermonger guys and gals who are in there signing people up, and the fact that everybody right now is freaking out in this country, actually I would say all over the world, is freaking out because of this COVID thing, and they've been sequestered, and they're, a lot of people have lost jobs, and their income's gone down like crazy, and they don't know what they're going to do, and so they're scared. And anytime people are afraid, they're going to do stuff that they would never do. And it really clouds your thinking, because what happens is you trigger the fight or flight brain, the limbic system, the amygdala hippocampus, which, you know, I remind all my patients quite frequently, is like an inch away from your basal ganglia, which is your, you know, fight or flight, life or death. You know, you got your hands on my cavewoman or caveman thing, and I'm going to cut your hands off kind of thing, right? And the amygdala hippocampus, those things are 6 to 8 inches from the prefrontals, which is where we do all our higher thinking, our planning, our, you know, impulse control stuff. That's all in the prefrontal lobes. And if you start jacking the amygdala hippocampus up through fear or intimidation or threat or beat the heck out of somebody emotionally or physically, whatever, they're not in prefrontal mode anymore. They're in fight or flight, caveman, cavewoman mode. They're in survival mode. And so they're going to react as if it's life or death. And then they're going to do things that they wouldn't ordinarily do otherwise. And then you add to that some guy or gal or group of guys or gals who will come in, stirring the pot up for whatever nefarious reasons they have. And then you have a situation like you have these days. And then you put pressure on the people who are supposed to contain the peace and order. And then if you get some bad seeds in those groups, which we all know they have, because every group has its bad seed and its good seeds, right? That, you know, your sample size again. Anytime you have a big sample size, you're going to have normal, quote-unquote, people, and you're going to have statistical outliers on both ends of the spectrum. So if you look at, you know, folks like the police force in general, or firefighters, or civilians, or military, or whatever, you're going to have some schmucks, and you're going to have some good guys and gals. And then everybody else is going to fall somewhere in that continuum. You put pressure on them, and these are the people with power, essentially. And the folks who are the bad seeds in those things are going to come out. This is their time to shine. And they're supposedly doing it under the auspices of crowd control, law and order, right? And that's where the problem starts. And then that reinforces the feeling of helplessness on the other end of the spectrum, the people who are getting the results of that, which then gives more fuel to the fire to these nefarious people who are stirring crowds up, and you can just see where this goes.
Okay. I'm not entirely sure that I'm on board with all of those things, but then I don't think it's a secret. Yeah, We both know that I watch a whole lot more news than you do. And some of this, I think, is a crime of opportunity of power abuse, taking advantage of timing, rather than the quarantine and stuff exacerbating things that wouldn't have happened. It's actually contained some things that probably would have happened if people weren't terrified of dying.
I just think it amplifies it. I just think it amplifies
it definitely aggravates it. And I think that moments like that that people didn't plan for, it's become a crime of opportunity for the exacerbators. Because I think that they have started pushing people because they're like, what are you going to do? You have to stay home. You have to be careful. You have to wear your mask and not go here and not go there. So we're going to kick your dog a little bit because you're not going to come out the house and do something. And then people just get tired of that crap, and then you put them in a corner where they have nothing else to lose.
And then they literally are doing a fight or flight thing, right?
Yeah.
Right.
So, okay. So in relation to that, the next part that we want to talk about And this is probably the most complicated and maybe the one that we have the least straightforward answers for, but we're going to try to give you guys some good advice to take home with you. Suggestions for coping with abuse of power, both personally and as a society. And honestly, these are both pointing at the same thing. It's just, you know, things you can do yourself and things that you can do collectively as members of various groups, you know, your workplace, your neighborhood or whatever. And we'll get into that. So the most difficult part of this entire topic of discussion is being someone who has been the target of or the bystander of consequences from dealing with abusers of power and or devotees of groupthink of some form. Those struggling to cope with power abusers and seemingly unreachable sycophants are in a remarkably similar boat to those struggling with PTSD and other external anxiety and trauma-based pathologies. It's largely about the broken sense of safety and security when one does not have the ability to stop power abusers or to reach and reason with friends or family that seem unable to engage outside the strict boundaries of whatever dogma or propaganda they're defending. That's the group thing. This sense of inevitability and loss of control is terrifying to most reasonable people. There are some suggestions out there for coping with such situations, but frankly, it often seems like solutions are inadequate or not hope-inspiring. Support system-type entities such as social services, mental health professionals, teachers, clergy, civic community groups, professional human resources staff, and so on. It can make policies or provide some resources, but once people in general feel powerless or gun-shy, frequently they won't reach out unless something seems guaranteed to work or help. They don't dare risk pushing back or dissenting just to have it fail. This is the same dynamic you see with people in abusive relationships. They don't leave the abuser because it's all or nothing. It's, you know, it's like the movie Sleeping with the Enemy. You have to have this convoluted plan to make sure that you're definitely away or they're going to come stalk you, they're going to find you again, and the cycle just repeats. And it's quite a few elements of the same dynamic, and that's not an accident. There's no magic easy answer, but there are some general steps that individuals and groups can try to take when there are opportunities to do so. People who are having problems with this need to feel that they won't be abandoned or left to fend for themselves. And isn't it weird that people on both sides of this problem have the same basic primal level fear? You know, we're not meant to be able to take on all of life alone. We want to be part of the tribe because our survival depends on it. So then you have people who abuse power as their solution, and then you have people who put up with that crap because if they can just get through it, that's how they survive. And it's the same basic fear, but some people go A and some people go B. So we work on people's sense of confidence and safety, and this will help both ends of this for the exact same reason. You know, building self-esteem in everyone, and I realize that these sentences sound just like the stuff I said a minute ago. People talk about it, and it just sounds like a bunch of empty T-shirt wisdom. We understand that. But it still is true that these are going to be the ways that you start to heal this. You need to work on people's self-esteem. You work on your own. Build a reliable peer community and build personal resilience. And then there's other general concepts that I'm going to name for you guys, and then I'm going to ask Dr. Mathis to talk about generally how to deal specifically with the people who abuse power, how to resist groupthink, and how to survive being the victim of power mongers. And, you know, like I said, these are general concepts, and it's just that people have lost their ability to be sure that any of these are going to help. And with this convoluted psychological spaghetti, I'm going to come to you, Dr. Mathis, and say, can you please untangle this for our listeners, if you would, please?
Oh, look at the time. Got to go.
No, don't leave me here.
Mr. Bills.
Yes.
I used to love Mr. Bills. Okay, I still love him. I still have an original T-shirt. Okay, but enough of my pathology. So one of the things you mentioned is very important. I want to talk about just for a second. Anytime you get into this learned helplessness, gee, there's nothing I can do, you're done. You got to get rid of that. The opposite end of that is I'm going to riot and burn and destroy and you know, kick back and get crazy. All right. Remember, nature is a balance, and we are part of balance. We are part of nature. We learn and function best in balance. Water is a great thing, but if you get too much water, it's called drowning. If you don't get enough water, it's called dehydration. You die from both. Strive for balance in your life. Really, really, and I can't emphasize this enough, really, really get out of your emotional brain and into your thinking brain. Anytime you're in fight or flight mode, anytime you're in, oh my God, the sky is falling mode, you are thinking from the amygdala hippocampus. You're thinking from the emotional brain. When you think of the emotional brain is a black, white, on, off, live, die, all or nothing brain. It doesn't have shades of gray. Engage your prefrontals. Take a couple of deep breaths. Reground yourself. Don't. And one of the things you need to do is don't believe all that crap you see on TV, that you hear on the news, that you see on social media. Take everything you read, hear, or see with a grain of salt, maybe 14 grains of salt. Think of the source of the material, as to how, quote-unquote, believable it is. The bottom line is you have to protect yourself. And if you're one of these people who is, the sky is falling, anytime you see a newscast coming out, cut the doggone thing out and stop watching it. Stop surfing the internet and looking for every single thing you can find and freaking the crap out of yourself. Don't be a dumbass. If you can do that responsibly, then go and do as much research and on a topic as possible. Look at both sides of the coin. Don't just read pro or don't just read con articles. Look at articles that are talking about both sides of the coin. Look into the matter and come to your own conclusions. Don't come to a conclusion just because you belong to a member of a group and you want to be honor that group you belong to, whether it's male, female, black, white, police, firemen, civilians, whatever. Use a clear head. Think with your rational brain, your prefrontals, not your irrational, emotional, the sky is falling, amygdala hippocampus brain. You will make the wrong decision every single time unless you're very lucky if you do that. Ground yourself. I can also not minimize the importance of peer support, as Ms. Shapiro mentioned earlier. Very, very, very important. Get as much peer support as you can, as much rational peer support as you can. So if the people around you are acting crazy or talking crazy, find a different peer group to assign to associate with. Don't get swept up in the emotion. Don't ever act out of emotion, because people do stupid things when they act out of emotion. I don't care how smart you are. You're gonna muck yourself up if you act emotionally. Always take a moment to ground yourself. Use some mindfulness. Use some deep breathing. Use some meditational, anything you can, whether it's music or reading a passage out of an existential or spiritual book that you like, whether it's the Quran or the Torah or the Bible or the secret teachings of Jesus or whatever, I don't care. Do something to reground yourself. Do something to empower yourself. Do something that you have some control over every single day. The little steps which will help resiliency and help your self-control and help your self-esteem and self-efficacy. Anytime you get a bunch of people talking crazy, distance yourself from them. Don't listen to it. Don't be impacted by the crazy thinking and the crazy talking. Don't let people hit your buttons. If you feel triggered by something, know that that's an issue you have to deal with. And you don't deal with issues by taking it out on other people. You deal with issues by doing it yourself and mastering your own pathology, not by expecting other people to acquiesce to yours. So if you can take control of that part and manage your own behavior, you can be much more effective. And that way you can resist groupthink. The more self-efficacy you have, the more empowerment you feel on a personal level, the less these people will impact you, whomever they might be, and will not be able to sway you as much. Really, really, really work on getting that. And if you're a data person, get as much data as you can from as many reliable sources as you can, right? And Wikipedia is not a reliable source for most folks. Most of the, a lot of the news, you know, news, where whichever news show or program you listen to, most news programs, and I'm not trying to slam them, I'm really not, but most of them are there to sell copy. They're not there to report the news. They are slanting the news. Every single news agency I know slants the news either in one direction or the other. Gone in my and this is just my personal opinion, so please take this with 15 grains of salt, but gone are the days where people are just reporting the facts. They're reporting the facts with a slant. And that's why I almost never watch the news, because I don't want to hear their crap. I don't want to hear their propaganda. You know, I look at the facts. I look at the facts. I research the facts. I look and see what's the pros of this, what's the cons of this, what are both sides of the argument on this, what's the right thing to do. Always go back on what's the right thing to do. Get your emotional crap out of it and look at it from a logical perspective. If this were you, and you were the person engaging in some of this behavior, or if you're contemplating engaging in this behavior, ask yourself, does that sit with your personal philosophy of life? Does that sit with your ethical, moral, spiritual, existential viewpoints? Just because somebody else is acting like a jerk, or somebody else is doing horrible things, doesn't give us a license to do horrible things. It is becomes a challenge for us to hold to a higher standard. That is what you have to always come back to. What's your higher standard? If you were called to judgment the next minute of your life, would you be able to justify what you're doing to your creator if you're that existential? That's just one example. Right? Are you acting in a manner consistent with someone that you hold in high regard? Who is your high regard role model? You know, whether it's an imaginary person or a real person you know in your neighborhood, or a famous person or a not so famous person. You know, if you claim to want to be like that person, and that person has all these positive qualities, ask yourself, will this person be doing what you're doing? Ask yourself, will this person be participating in these kind of activities? Because in most cases, most successful leaders who are beneficent don't engage in the kind of behaviors that we've been seeing over the last couple of months from any scenario. You've got to take the higher ground. You've always got to look the long picture and take the higher ground. That doesn't mean you can't be politically active. That doesn't mean you can't be socially active. It just means you do it responsibly and you don't get swept up in the moment. It's hard to do. And I say this like, oh, you just, it's not that easy. And I'm not trying to make it easy, and I don't want to infantilize anybody or insult anybody's intelligence. It's just you've got to really stand on your own two feet and think for yourself. Even if your best buddy has gone off on a wild tangent, or your parents or kids or whatever, or husband or wife or boyfriend or whatever, gone on these wild tangents, you've got to stand your ground. You've got to be different. You've got to be the lighthouse in the fog. Imagine yourself as the role model, because if you start acting responsibly, other people are going to notice it. And maybe you will be the light that other people who aren't as developed or not as strong or haven't taken the time to ground themselves will say, wait a minute, Jane's not doing that, or Bill's not doing that, or, you know, Dick's doing something else. Maybe I should look at why they're doing that or why they're not doing part of this. Always look at all sides of an issue. Don't just assume that your side of the issue is correct. You know, there was an old extreme record that says something like three sides to every story, and, you know, your side, my side, and then the middle, the reality of what's true. And that's true in almost every case. You know, we see things through our own visions. We see things through our own glasses, so to speak. And sometimes we have the data and it's correct, and sometimes we don't. Always be willing to look at other sides. That's hard to do. And I can tell you, as a human being, it's hard to do, because I was a person before, you know, I was a therapist and had all these degrees and licenses and all this crap after my name. And I'm still subjected and still susceptible to some of the stuff as a human that I was before I had the degrees. Because if my emotional stuff gets triggered, I can act like a dingbat too. I have no problem doing that. I'm ashamed to say that, but it's true. I'd be lying if I said it wasn't. I was a human before I was a doctor. I was a person before I was a professional. And that person still has fears, and that person still has worries, and that person still has anxieties. But I have to balance that by looking at what would I want to be? What would my role model, what would my ideal role model want me to do? And that's what I always try to come back to, and I try to anchor myself. And most of the time, I come to the right answer, and I do the right thing. But not all the time, because I'm human, I'm going to mess up. And if any of you in the sound of my voice do something stupid and you mess up, don't spend time beating the crap out of yourself. That's not beneficial. That is not going to get you anywhere but more stress and anxiety, and much more likely to fall prey to these emotional advertisements that you see. So keep yourself grounded. If you make a mistake, come back and punt and do it again. Right. Don't beat the crap out of yourself. We are all human. We all fail at times. We all do stupid shit at times. That's just part of the package, unfortunately. And if you feel like you need more support and more help, call somebody. Talk to a friend. Talk to a professional. Talk to anybody who's got that you respect, who's got a sane brain, and help them, get them to help you reground. Very, very important to take time out. And part of that means eating correctly and not spacing yourself out with drugs and alcohol and escaping, avoiding stuff. You can't hide. You've got to face this stuff with a clean mind and a clean body as much as you can, and a clear head, and not get involved in anything crazy. Again, that doesn't mean you can't advocate. That doesn't mean you can't go out and say, hey, this is wrong, if you really believe that. But do it with all the facts in mind, and do it with a clear head, and do it with the conscience that you're going to be the role model that's going to show how to be respectful both of yourself and of the ideals that you're representing.
Okay. Yeah, I really like the idea of choosing to be the role model. And I know that some of you who are struggling with this are like, oh, I'm an introvert, or I don't know things, and this is super scary, and, you know, let the extroverted people go and do that. But the point of the show is dealing with these behaviors and coping with the results of these behaviors, and that is probably one of the most constructive things that anybody of any intelligence and any power at all over yourself can go do.
Right.
Start being the role model. You don't have to be perfect. You don't have to have it all figured out. Just do one thing and do it in integrity and do it the way it should be being done. And, you know, get your facts and don't let everything run you. And no,
yep.
It's not easy. And with all the crap going on right now, you know, basically if you're not an old white man with power, you know, you're probably getting crapped on right now. I get it. But we need to get you guys a way out of this and a way to cope with this. And so that's the point. So hopefully this is helpful to you guys. I have one more clip that I'm going to play for you guys, which is really a good ending to those thoughts. It's Rages Take the Power Back, which I'm going to slip in here real quick. So definitely,
cool.
You guys, think about what we said. Start working on taking your power back. Here we go.
The plastic curriculum, I put my sense in them. Eurocentric, every last one of them. See right through the red, white, and blue disguise. Lecture of function, the structure of life. Solving our minds and attempting to hold us back. We've got to take it back. Pulls in a spirit called the tears and fears. One side is story for years and years and years. I'm inferior, who's inferior? Yeah, you need to check the interior of the system. Who cares about only one culture and that? Well, we gotta take the power back.
So, in summary, we hope now that our listeners better understand abusive power as a social dynamic, groupthink, propaganda and how each of these concepts plays into our current social, cultural, and political atmospheres. We hope that some of tonight's discussion will be helpful in coping with these matters in the months and years to come. So this concludes our show, King Nothing, Power Corrupts. And I'm going to turn to you, Dr. Mathis, and see if there's anything else that you would like to add overall before we close.
Nope, I'm good. Thank you.
All righty. So thank you for that. And on behalf of myself, Dr. Mathis, and NDB Media, we want to thank our listeners this evening and give our appreciation to those of you who might be joining us later via podcast, iTunes, etc. So we'll see you guys in 2 weeks with a new topic for discussion on Wednesday, not the 24th, because that'll be 2 weeks from now. This will be the 8th of July at 11 p.m. Eastern Time right here on blogtalkradio.com. We'd also like to give a shout-out to other NDB Media shows coming up in the next couple of weeks. Travel Itch Radio, tomorrow night, 8 p.m. Eastern Time. Travel Itch Radio presents a special guest on Thursday, June 25th in Dr. Matthew Naylor, President and CEO of the World War I Museum in Kansas City. Listen as Dan Schlossberg and Keita Roberts learn about the Great War and hear how its artifacts, documents, and stories are preserved in a world-class museum. Saturday, Sports Talk with the Guys, Saturday Morning Extravaganza, Saturday the 27th, 9 a.m. Eastern Time. The Monday Morning Quarterbacks are live on Saturday morning. No one is safe while we troll the digital airways. Join us as we discuss the latest news in the world of sports and review the events of the past week. No fantasy sports here. We keep it real. The Walking Dead online viewing party. You guys will remember Sunday, April 5th, was a temporary season 10 finale, quote-unquote, due to a work stoppage because of the quarantine. Season 10, Episode 15, The Tower. Episode 16, A Certain Doom, will air later in summer 2020, as well as the new third Walking Dead series, World Beyond. AMC is teasing a season finale soon. We are thinking July, but no dates as of yet. We promise we'll let you guys know. They're really stretching this out. I think they're having problems committing to a date because of quarantine issues, but we will bring it back to you as soon as possible. Monday Night in America with Roger Noriega, June 29th at 10 p.m. Eastern Time. Roger D. Noriega brings you his unique take on politics, current events, entertainment, sci-fi, and history. We have a new show in our roster, Jedi Tax Radio, on Sunday, July 5th. A new show airing monthly on first Sundays in the evening. This will be after the Walking Dead slot when that returns. Rogelio D. Noriega, CRTP, with 33 years of income tax preparation experience, discussing the latest news in income taxes, ongoing issues for taxpayers and tax preparers. If you have a question that you need answered, contact him via Twitter at the IRS Man on Twitter. Special guests and hosts will be joining him. See also the website www.jedi.tax. And Twitter, I've already given you the Twitter, so there. Feel free to contact him with your tax questions. I know this year's been really weird and crazy with all of these stipends that we're getting from the government and people being on and off of work, so now you can come get some help Sunday nights, first Sunday nights of the month. Please look for the Rock and Roll Shrink on Facebook, on Twitter, on iTunes, and at www.rockandrollshrink.com. Good night, everybody. Thanks for joining us, and we will see you in 2 weeks. Rock on.